Ladies and gentlemen, how we doing? This is producer Mikey here with the Overstated Podcast. Don't worry about our friend Steve, like I know so many of you are. He is not dead like his Milwaukee Bucks. He took the night off on the pod with us to go celebrate his favorite day of the year, the NFL draft. We're going to miss him, but we got a little treat for everybody. We're going to put him on at the end. He did about 15 minutes earlier today on his Bucks, how the season ended. I haven't listened to it yet. I'm going to go into it blind and listen to it just like the rest of you. I know Brett's going to do the same thing. We cannot fucking wait for that. But, you know, RIP Bucks and Snacks. I'm going to bring in our friend, our favorite, your favorite as well, Brett Usher. Brett, why don't you do us a favor and why don't you tell us your thoughts on the Milwaukee Bucks and how their season ended? Just real quick, because we know we got Steve hitting it later as well.
Man, it was unbelievable. Like, truly. Shocking, stunning, surprising, astonishing, astounding. I've never seen any, like, I've never been so shocked, I don't think, by a playoff series outcome in all the years I've been watching basketball. Like, if Miami had beaten them in seven, okay, right? Maybe not the craziest thing in the world. But for them to beat them in five games, considering just the, at least like the perceived talent disparity or just strength disparity between the two teams, like the Bucks were a team that a lot of people were picking to not only make the finals, but win the NBA title. And the Heat, like, you know, if you're just going by the regular season, like they really weren't much. And so I'm just still stunned by it. And I know that, you know, of course, Giannis wasn't 100%. That's obviously a big factor here. And Jimmy was playing out of his mind. You know, if he's not at that level, I don't think they stand a chance at winning that series, even with Giannis slowed down a little bit. But that's how things happen. And Spoelstra, obviously, coach circles around Budenholzer. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's rightfully the big story of Game five, was some of the coaching blunders, really. I'm sure Steve will get into them later on this podcast, but there was, you know, just some obvious ones like, why didn't you call that timeout? Why didn't you call that timeout? Why mm-hmm. did this guy have the ball? Why weren't you making these certain adjustments? Like, even Giannis hinted at that post game, like, you know, adjustments that weren't made. So there's a lot there, man. Like, and I think a lot of the blame is going to fall on Coach Bud, and rightfully so, but, you know, there's a lot you can point to. I don't think they had the greatest roster. I think maybe their roster was a little overrated.
In retrospect, it's easy to say that, but I think you're right, though. Yeah,
it is, but it's like, exactly. But it is kind of like, I mean, they're old, you know, relatively speaking, and they're unathletic, mm-hmm. relatively speaking. Man, they just, I can't believe they're out. In round one.
It's crazy you say that. You mentioned that a lot of people had them picked. I seriously had all the confidence that they were going to come back from down 3-1. I just thought, like, you know, the Heat played great. Jimmy had a great series. Game four, I really just thought that, like, oh, that was an all-time Jimmy Butler game. But Giannis is finally back cooking. They're going to figure it out. Like, I was fully confident. I was confident almost up until the point when Jimmy made that lob. Like, against, yeah. at the end of regulation, like, I was like, they still got this. And then Bud didn't call a timeout. And then I was just, all my faith went away. And then we're going to save all the rest of the Bucks chat, because we got Steve coming up at the end of the pod. And, you know, he's going to go in deep. He's not going to take it easy on his team. It's a good time to transition, though, into what we wanted to talk about mostly, was the next two series that are going to be starting. Second round of the playoffs finally coming. We got our first games are coming on Saturday. We got two matchups. And that's what we're going to be previewing with this pod. And let's go ahead and start with the series that I'm most excited for, the most unexpected second round series I can think of in recent history. We've got the New York Knicks going up against the Miami Heat, the eighth seed, and Jimmy Butler, who's been just a flamethrower in those five games against the Bucks. He averaged 37.6 points, 6 rebounds, 4.8 assists. Just, have you ever seen a better first round series than what Jimmy Butler did for a team that low seeded? Maybe, like, I could think of, like, Tracy McGrady, against the Pistons, like in 2004, I want to say, something like that. But they didn't win that series, so you got to give the edge to him.
Yeah, man, I haven't thought about that one yet, but I know that it's up there for sure, where, like, you know, you're probably going back to prime Jordan, you know, type of, like,
oh yeah,
you know, the kind of weight he was shouldering, the workload, and then just in that level of production, averaging almost 38 points a game, and then just the clutch factor, the big shots, the game winners, like, just, it was unreal, man. I don't know. I'd put that up there with anything I've seen in a first round series. And it's crazy because it's like not really anything new for Jimmy. Like, I loved his quote the other day. I think it was after game four, where someone asked him about playoff Jimmy. Like, come on, can you just admit that it's a real thing? He's like, no, it's not a thing. I'm just hooping. And that got me thinking about, like, when we talk about these guys that are, like, considered playoff risers, like Jimmy Butler being a prime example, where I'm like, I think sometimes we incorrectly frame it as, like, guys stepping up their effort or stepping up their game or, like, living for these moments. And, like, there's some truth to that, but I think most guys step up their game for the playoffs. I think what really separates guys like Jimmy Butler is, like, how well their game translates to postseason basketball, which is an entirely different animal than regular season basketball. And I think that combined with just him loving the moment and his effort and all that, like, it makes him into this monster in the playoffs every year. But it's certainly not a coincidence, because we've been seeing this every year, man. This team was in the finals in 2020 in the bubble. They were in the conference finals last year when people didn't probably think they would be there. They were a high seed, but I think people doubted them. And then this year, like, here we are. Like, they've got a great chance to go back to the conference finals yet again. And I was reading somewhere earlier today, like, whichever of these two teams wins, you know, the Knicks or the Heat, and advances to the conference finals, it'll be just the fifth team in the last 24 years seeded five or lower to make the conference finals. So it's, needless to say, an unlikely second round matchup, but it's going to be a fun one, I think. There's a lot of history between these teams. As a guy in his 30s, man, I can remember.
We grew up with it, yeah.
I remember the late 90s, bro. So, like, this is kind of like a rekindling of that rivalry, because, like, they've met in the playoffs since then, I think, a couple times. But this feels different, though, I think, because of the nature of this Knicks team and this Heat team. Like, I think we could really get some, like, Alonzo Mourning, Larry Johnson, Tim Hardaway.
That's what I like about it is –
yeah.
When you think of, like, modern teams, these have some of the more, like, scrappy personalities for, like, teams and, like, just rosters as a whole. You've got Jimmy Butler against guys like just, like, tough guys. Like, Bam and Jimmy are tough. On the other side, you got Josh Hart, you got Jalen Brunson. Like, these guys just have that, like, dog in them kind of demeanor.
Quentin Grimes. Like,
yeah,
come on. Grimes.
You know, they just want to, like, and even your boy Obi Toppin, like, when Randall went down, he was showing some stuff. And like you said, this is just an unexpected series. That's what's so freaking cool about it. We're not going to dive deep into the other series that has been set in the East, which is the expected series, Celtics-Sixers. We're going to dive deeper into that later. You and I just kind of finished watching the end of the Hawks and Celtics game. And yeah, not a lot of surprise that it's going there. I think we're a little surprised at how far the Hawks took the Celtics. But we'll talk about that series a couple days down the line once we've had some time to really digest it. We should give the Knicks a little bit of shine here. What did you see from them against the Cavs that impressed you?
First and foremost, the same thing that's been impressing me all season with them is their depth. Like, even a couple months ago, I remember asking people on Twitter, it's like, are the Knicks the deepest team in the league? And everyone's like, no, the Clippers, you know? And it's like, I don't know. Like, I kind of do feel like the Knicks are the deepest team in the league right now. That I think then maybe it was a little bit of a hot take, but I think, I mean, Obi Toppin is like your ninth man, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and then you get Grimes back.
I think they're, just to interrupt real quick, I think they're deepest in the sense of, like, having a true rotation. And when you're, like, talking about a team like the Clippers or, like, the Warriors, whoever you want, that have, like, guys who, like, deep on the bench who can come in, these are, like, nine guys that play every night and know their roles. I can't think of a team that's got a better, like, locked-in nine-man rotation in the league right now. And, like, that's kind of scary when you think about, like, you're going up against a team that just knows who they are.
Yeah. And I think maybe that's why it's kind of shining so brightly now in the postseason, is because like this is where it gets down to like 9-man rotations, where you're maybe not playing those guys on the end of the bench as much. So it's like, especially for the playoffs, it's like they're like the most functionally deep team in the league, I think. So that stood out a lot, man. When you look at the play of those guys quickly, like he was awesome. Hartenstein, really solid. Like Obi Toppin, like again, like your eighth, probably ninth man on that team. And like he could start for, you know, a few teams at least. You know, I think he's like a starting caliber player in the NBA. If that guy's your ninth man, like that's a really nice luxury. And then Grimes has actually missed the last couple games with a shoulder injury. I'm assuming he's going to be back for game one. I think he was questionable for that last game, so he should be back. And I'm assuming he'll go back into the starting five. And then you have Josh Hart off your bench as well. So you're talking about Quickly, Hart, Hartenstein, Toppin, and maybe McBride if they need to go 10. So like that's kind of what jumps out first for me with the Knicks, and especially, you know, compared to this Miami Heat team, which I would not describe as deep by any means. I would,
contrary to Kevin O'Connor, what he said, that was crazy. Yeah,
it was. I did read the comments on it where he was like, he was kind of like, no, I meant deep with undrafted players. I should have clarified. Like he kind of. Okay. But you know what? Like those guys balled out for them in the first round.
I think it's completely fair to say that it was like a Herculean effort by Jimmy, and then a lot of like well-timed overachieving from the supporting cast. And it's like, that's sometimes just what you need to get by.
Yeah. But so like if those guys, if Duncan Robinson and Caleb Martin and Cody Zeller are all playing at a really high level, then yeah, you are a deep team. But you know, are we going to get that same kind of series from Duncan Robinson, from Caleb Martin again? I'm not sure. Yeah, man. So I don't know. I think that's an area where the Knicks have a clear advantage to me, as being say one of the three deepest teams in the league against maybe the shallowest of like the good teams in the league, at least on paper. You never know what you're going to get from these guys, but that's somewhere where I see a big advantage for the Knicks. And to get back to your question, yeah, that's what kind of jumped out a lot to me against Cleveland, who's another team that lacks some critical depth. That was a big part of why the Knicks beat them, was just the how much better their bench is.
What do you think about I think we should do a couple minutes on the starters of the Knicks, and mainly Jalen Brunson, who I think in a series with Garland and Donovan Mitchell on the other side, I think Jalen Brunson was clearing away the best guard in the series. And I think that was maybe one of the major factors to what shifted the series. Jalen Brunson completely balled out. 24 points, five assists, four rebounds. Shot it well. What did he shoot here? He didn't shoot crazy, but 43%. Didn't even get to the line that much, but shot it at 95%. He's just really steady play. You mentioned how they had kind of just a balanced attack across the roster, but what do you see from Jalen Brunson and his chances going up against the Heat? And also, we should touch on Julius Randle. We don't know what his health is going to be going into game one of the series. I'm assuming he's going to play if he played on it before, but we do have to point that out. There's a chance that he'll miss a game or two, but yeah, do a couple minutes on Jalen Brunson and his chances for the series.
I mean, first of all, like just what a season this guy has had. You know, I in the beginning of the season, you know, when they first got him, basically instead of Donovan Mitchell, it was like, that's crazy. Like, okay, Brunson's a nice player, but Mitchell's in an entirely different stratosphere. And then at the beginning of the season and through the season, Mitchell obviously had a phenomenal season, an all NBA first team caliber season. And but Brunson was fantastic too. And that's where it was like, okay, Mitchell's still clearly the better player. He's definitely in a different tier, but Brunson's really good and he's probably a better fit for this Knicks team. And then it was kind of like, nobody really felt too bad about that decision. And now it's like, I don't know. Is Donovan Mitchell really better than Jalen Brunson? I mean, I guess he is, but I think it's a lot closer now than anybody thought it was, you know, before the season, if we're just talking about those two. So I thought that was interesting, but man, yeah, what a season Brunson has had. And I think against Miami, like he should be able to get off. I mean, not just Brunson. I think the Heat are going to have a lot of trouble defending this Knicks team. And Brunson's a big part of that, but I actually think Randle's an even bigger part of that. Like, I think having him healthy and available and you know, at his best is going to be key, because I don't really know who Miami uses to guard him. Like, what do they do there? Like, they're gonna have their hands full with Brunson for sure. But it's mm-hmm. like, what do you do with Randall? Like, you put Kevin Love on him?
I think you're gonna see a lot of Bam on him.
Okay,
gonna be playing Kevin Love, he's gonna be having to guard the pick and roll with Mitchell Robinson.
Yeah, I mean, Bam would seem the natural choice. He's one of the best defensive players in the league. Like, he can definitely guard Julius Randle, but Julius Randle can pull him out. And then mm-hmm. the Knicks have Mitchell Robinson. And we saw what he did to the Cavs on the offensive glass. And not to mention just his threat as a dunker down there around the hoop. So, like, if Bam is busy guarding Julius Randle, who is going to deal with Mitchell Robinson on the glass and just down low? Like, that's where I think that could present a huge problem for Miami, because they're a pretty small team. They actually rebound pretty well. But, you know, again, if Bam is occupied on Randle, I think it could look similar to how it did against the Cavs. And the Cavs have Jared Allen and Evan Mobley.
It's a similar matchup for them to what they went up against when they faced the Hawks in the play-in. And that looked like a completely different team than we saw in the first round. Like, the Heat looked small, they looked slow, they looked old. Like, I would have never imagined that was the team that was going to pull off this effort they did against the Bucks. So it depends on what Heat team you're getting. If you're getting that one that showed up for even the – they didn't look great against the Bulls in the play-in either. I don't know if the Bucks just presented, like, a great matchup for them, and maybe it's a little bit of fool's gold, but – it's super interesting series. Like, I think you're right. Matchups are going to play a really key part on the season. The Knicks won the season series 3-1, but the points were all pretty close. Like, nobody dominated any games. So it's going to be a lot of bloodlust on the floor out there. I'm thinking this one's going to go 7. I don't know who I would pick. I know you're having a tough time making predictions this early, but who do you want to say you got pulling out that series?
This one's going to be a little bit easier for me. Like, I'm definitely going to pick the Knicks. I mean, first, you know, the things we've talked about, the depth, some of the matchup issues. Another thing that I like about the Knicks in this series is that they have a lot of guys that can throw at Jimmy Butler.
True.
Like, I think for the Heat to win this series, Jimmy's going to have to do something along the lines of what he did against Milwaukee in the first round. Maybe not quite to that extent, but something pretty, pretty damn playoff Jimmy. And but the Knicks have guys like Quentin Grimes and Josh Hart and RJ Barrett, like just those three right there. Like, that's a pretty nice little platoon to throw at Jimmy Butler. I don't know if they're going to like stop him, but that's about as good as you could hope for, I would think, in terms of matching up with him. So that's another thing I like about them, in addition to the depth and just the size with Mitchell Robinson, if Bam is occupied with Randall. And then, of course, there's home court advantage too. You know, the Knicks have home court. They have a great home court. MSG's been just off the chain this postseason. So, you know, not only do they have home court advantage, but they have home court advantage at MSG.
Which is crazy. It's crazy. I think I said earlier that they were the fourth seed. It was a mistake. They're the fifth seed. And they were making that push kind of after the trade deadline. And we did a couple pods in them and how fun they were. I would have never expected. I just thought, nice story. Thought maybe they get into the second round. I didn't think they'd be going in the second round hosting a series with the home court advantage. So it's like it all fell pretty nice for them. You hear a lot of like Knicks fans talking about, like, before this series, they were talking about, like, hey, maybe there's going to be a Bucks collapse. Maybe we'll get the Heat. And I thought it was, what the fuck are these people talking about? But now we're living it. And I'm really excited just to see, like, the Garden for a second-round playoff series against the Heat. That's going to be insane. I'm super excited to see these crazy fucking Knicks fans just losing their shit. Like, give me all of that. Plug that into my veins. I don't know. I'm amped up for that series.
How about Tibbs and Jimmy too? Like, that's kind of a fun little subplot, and maybe another little.
Sorry, Riley. Shout out Chicago Bulls fans and all their pain, but it's going to be fun to watch.
Oh man, so yeah, I don't know, man. I want it to go 7 so badly that I want to pick it to go 7, but
you sound like you're pretty in on the Knicks here.
Knicks and 6 has a pretty good ring to it. So.
Knicks and 6, baby.
Yeah. I'm gonna go with that. I mean, look, man, like I was telling myself after Miami beat the Bucks, like, never doubt the Heat again. Never doubt the Heat again. Never doubt the Heat again. Because I doubt them pretty much every year I underestimate them and they almost always prove me wrong. But you know, they're a good team, man. But I just think the Knicks are, I think the Knicks are better. I think the Knicks are all the way legit, but that Randall thing, like if he were to miss a couple games, that could change things. So yeah. I'm assuming he's going to be available and himself. And I mean, I'm assuming Grimes will be back. That's a little bit, not quite.
Do we know
important.
About Tyler Hero? Is he done?
Yeah.
It's gotta be,
and that's,
right?
Yeah. And I think they could feel that too in this series more than they did in the first round, because again, I'm not sure Jimmy can do quite what he did against the Bucks, especially when you look at the way the Knicks can match up with him. And if you take, you know, a little bit of that production away from Jimmy, then it's like, that's where you might really start to feel Hero. Cause Hero was really good against the Knicks this season. He averaged like 23 against them in the regular season. So I think they might start to feel that a little more, especially if Duncan Robinson cools off a little bit, like, you know, not to take anything away from
them.
How
many of these Gabe Vincent, Max Strus, Lowry games are you going to get? Like it's going to start fading away. I feel you.
That's where I'm at with it. So, you know, yeah, if they had Hero, I would like their chances a little better, but you know, I think if the Knicks are healthy, I think they take it in six at most.
I'm going to go Knicks in seven just because someone on here has got to be the voice of seven game drama.
I love it, man.
Yeah, let's bring that 90s back. But let's move across the pond. We've had another series that we wanted to talk about. It's going to be the Nuggets Suns. I think this is a predictable series. We've been talking about this being an important series, I feel like, since KD got traded. And like the West just seemed so set for quite some time. And we've been, you know, we knew the Nuggets were going to have kind of an easy first round. I think the Suns, they won in five against the Clippers. It didn't look like a five-game series to me. Like, it felt like six, seven. Like, that was harder than it should have been. Shout out Russell Westbrook, kind of proving all of us wrong. Showed a lot of heart, but we're not here to talk about the Clippers today. We're going to talk about these Nuggets and Suns. It's finally here after all the buildup. These two teams split the season series 2-2. But really, the rosters have changed so much. Like, you can kind of just throw all those stats out. I think even Jokic only played in two of those games. The last time Jokic did play against the Suns was on Christmas Day, and he annihilated them. I think he had like 45, 15, and 15. Yeah, just rough overview before we start like running deep into the numbers and all that. Like, what's your feeling for this series, Brett?
I think it's going to be a lot of buckets.
High scoring one?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think either one of these teams can guard the other one. You know, when you start thinking about how they might match up, like I don't know. I don't really see these teams like doing too good of a job of stopping each other. So I'm thinking it's going to be a pretty high scoring, super fun, close series. You know, I think there's some clear like X factors when you look at both teams, like different guys that need to step up. But just, yeah, on the surface, man, they seem evenly matched. Obviously, the Suns are a little tough to read because obviously they haven't been together that long with Durant. They've only played a handful of games with him still. And then that first round series was just so weird where, like, I don't know, the Clippers were tough, but also they were nowhere near full strength. No PG and no Kawhi for a lot of it. So it's hard to like get a great read off that first round series. But like you were saying before, that didn't feel like a five game series. Like it definitely felt more like a seven game series. Like it felt close. Like, I don't know why, but it just felt like the Clippers were just in it. Like, you know, for a lot of it. And I guess the Suns didn't impress me quite as much as I thought they would, but
looking a little creaky, right? Just like,
yeah,
something about it. Obviously it takes time to gel. I think the only game they've lost with KD in a Suns uniform was that game one, and that kind of caught everyone by surprise. But there's something going on there, but can't take away from what Devin Booker did in that series. I think outside of Jimmy Butler, been the best player in the playoffs so far, and honestly not close after those two guys. Devin Booker, 37.2 points per game, 6.4 assists, 5 rebounds, just shot the lights off the ball. I think he's got like a true shooting of like 68% in those five games. I don't know if you did you watch game five?
Yes.
He had that, what do you have,
25
in the third quarter. I turned the game on after halftime, and I just felt like it was like 2016 Steph Curry, like you were surprised when he finally missed. Like,
it was
an all-time heat check. And I think that was the first time I've seen Kevin Durant on a basketball court. And you think of all the like the great people that Kevin Durant's played with. It was the first time that I looked at Kevin Durant and I was like, no, it's cool. You could just be the second best player.
Yeah.
And it took after playing with Westbrook, Curry, Irving, Harden, like it took this Devin Booker to be the guy that's just like, all right, KD, you can kind of move off. Like, is KD like at a point in his career where he's maybe the greatest sidekick that you can have of all time? Is he phasing into that? And is that good enough for the Suns?
I mean, that's definitely what they're doing. That's pretty much since he's been there, he's been, you know, off ball, you know, and it's been the Booker show. And it's like, you can't really complain about that strategy. Like, again, that first round, it wasn't perfect, but they got it done, and they've only lost once since they got KD. So like, maybe, I don't know, maybe our expectations are just crazy for them. But yeah, Book, man, like that was like, you know, Kobe level. I mean, for real. Especially that game five, that third quarter, like that was definitely one of the five highest scoring quarters in playoff history. I was having trouble finding the data like before 1996, but I think since then it was top three or something. But I think Dame had a 25 or 26 at one point a couple years ago. But
I think it was that
where he had 55 or something.
Yeah, he had like kind of a similar performance, but unfortunately, of course, they lost that game
in OT. Yeah,
that was a heartbreaker.
That had to have been the game, but
yeah,
man. Book's on another level though. Like he's right there with Jimmy. It's just like Jimmy, you know, Book's obviously got a lot more talent around him, and Jimmy's had the game winners and shit. So like, I do think Jimmy was the MVP of round one, but Book mm-hmm. is right behind him for sure. So like, and that feels sustainable. Like that, like maybe not 37 a game or whatever it was, but like, I mean, he's not slowing down. And I think just having Durant like off ball and his gravity is just making Book's life easier. And we're seeing the best version of Book. We're seeing like an MVP caliber Book, but I mean, it is like a fair question is like, are they underutilizing Durant? Like you have arguably the greatest scorer in NBA history here, who's still in his prime, as we saw, you know, earlier this season, obviously with Brooklyn, like he was maybe the best player in the league. And he's just kind of like, you know, not the number one guy. And he's not running pick and rolls. Like he's just off ball, and he's like the ultimate distraction, like the ultimate decoy, I guess. I don't know, man, it's working, but it's like one of those things where like, do they make a shift at some point where like, they make an effort to get him a little bit more involved,
mm-hmm.
or do they just, you know, I think they're going to stick with Book as the guy. And as long as that's working, they're going to roll with it. But it is weird. Like you said, just kind of seeing KD like as like the second guy. But it speaks to Book's greatness though. Like Book is special.
I think he's really making ascension here. Like we kind of always talk about that, like, upper tier of players. I think Book is, it takes the playoffs to make that like real leap. And I think Book's kind of entering that conversation, like firmly top 10, like possibly like in that 7 or 8 range. It's always fun to look at that at the end of the season, but like,
right.
He's right there. I think like with Luka and Tatum, especially some of these guys, like even his teammate KD kind of fall back a little bit. Like I think that he's entering that tier, and like we're watching it happen in real time.
I think he's the best at his position, you know, in the NBA.
Like, which is two guard in the league.
Best two guard. Yeah. I think he's the best two guard in the league. Like for sure. For sure. I mean, you know, I guess Donovan Mitchell's a two, but I'm not taking him over Booker.
Oh God, no.
I love Anthony Edwards. Like what he did in the first round, even in a loss, like deserves a big shout out. He was
phenomenal.
He averaged almost 32 points a game. I mean, he was outstanding, but I'm not taking him over Booker. If you want to say like next 10 years, that's a conversation. But right now, it's Devin Booker, man. And like, so yeah, whether you have him top 8 or top 10 or top 12 or top 15, whatever, he's the best two guard in basketball. And I think there's no question about that. He would have been in the MVP conversation this season if he hadn't gotten hurt. Like he would have been,
oh yeah,
maybe not like one of the, you know, three finalists, but like he probably would have been like a top five guy, like right for there sure. with Tatum, like you said. Yeah, so
first team all NBA kind of guard as well.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Yeah.
Well, let's do a little bit on the Nuggets. I brought up the stats from the 2021 series that's kind of stained Jokic's career.
Suns in four. Suns in four.
Suns in four. Suns in four. you know, there's a lot of talk about that series and how DeAndre Ayton was able to cover Jokic one-on-one, et cetera, et cetera. And it just goes to show like how great of a force Jokic is, because like what's considered a bad series for him offensively, 25 points, 13 and a half rebounds, six assists. Like he got his. But I think more so was like what he did on the defensive end. He got attacked over and over in pick and roll. Chris Paul is certainly not the same player. Devin Booker is making the leap, though. So it's going to be tough for him on that side. But worth noting that joining Jokic is going to be Jamal Murray, who has just been absolutely fantastic this postseason. And actually, throughout his career, Jamal Murray wasn't there in 2021. We got to remember that. Mm-hmm. He's just starting to kind of like regain that 2020 bubble form that he had. Throughout his career, Jamal Murray is a 25 point per game scorer in the playoffs. I don't think a lot of people realize that. He's got a lot of reps too. It's, he's going up against looking like 34 games.
Maybe even, at least. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's another one, man. Like he's a beast in the playoffs. And yeah, that's
some
reason
he turns it up. This in the first round series against the Timberwolves just completely shot the shit out of the ball, and 27 points per game. Like these Nuggets are obviously a different level higher than they were in like 2021 last season as well. Cause like Jamal Murray is a for real force again. It's going to be cool to see him get his moment. They also have, you know, I'm really curious to see how they're going to defend the Suns, not just like the pick and roll actions. I don't know who they're going to put on Booker. You got to assume that Aaron Gordon, is going to be the Kevin Durant stopper, the right. attempted Kevin Durant stopper. And if KD's just playing the decoy, like what are we looking at for that matchup? I'm curious about that. But on the other end, somebody on the Suns has to guard Jamal Murray. I don't know who's going to do that. So this is a really interesting series as far as cross matches. Yeah, I think you're right. I think this one's going to be just a fucking high-scoring barn burner. That's going to be an exciting one. It's going to be a little bit different than the Heat and the Knicks series for sure.
Oh, I think they're going to be polar opposites. I think in the Heat Knicks, we're going to get like 90, I'm going to call it right
94,
now
94-90.
We're going to bro, I'm thinking lower than that. I'm thinking like I'm thinking like 80. We get like an 84-79 or something.
Oh my God,
we're going to get something like that. We're going to get a combined score of like under 160. Five in one of these.
Oh games, man, it's gonna, yeah, it's gonna feel be like an early 2000s. Adam I think Silver's gonna call in a complaint.
We're gonna eat it up though, because it's like now that that's like we don't ever see that. Like when it does happen, it's like, oh, this is sick. This is a throwback. Like I hope the whole series is like that. But and then I think the Suns Nuggets is all gonna be, you know, in the 120s at least. So, but you make an important point though about the Nuggets, just how different this Nuggets team is, because everyone is kind of talking about, we've seen Jokic in the, we've seen the Nuggets in the playoffs. We've seen this, like where it's like, we have not seen this Nuggets team. We have never seen Jokic, Murray, MPJ, Gordon.
Yeah.
We've never seen that core four together in the playoffs. Not to mention they added KCP, which is exactly what they needed. The ultimate 3-and-D like role player, right? Very good perimeter defender, very good shooter. And then also Bruce Brown, who gives them some juice on defense, a little more cutting juice.
He had
juice
a lot of good moments in that first series.
He's great, man. And then even Christian Brown, their rookie, who's a very nice contributor off the bench. Again, he adds more defense. So like this is probably the best defensive, you know, team of the Jokic era, I think, in Denver. I mean, they're still going to give up a lot of points at the rim. Like there's no doubt about that. And that's one where it's like, you know, how much can the Suns exploit that? And I think that's where Ayton is going to be super important. You know, the Suns love the mid range. I think we're going to see a ton of that. I think the way Jokic is going to defend the pick and roll, we're going to see a ton of mid range jumpers from Chris Paul, from Booker. But like, as far as at the rim, that's where I think, you know, Ayton could really cause problems, out of that pick and roll. So, he's just got to be at his best, man. He's got to be like the guy that we saw when they went to the finals.
mm-hmm.
on both ends. You know, like he does a better job than most guys on Jokic on both ends, defensively and as a scorer. Like he, at his best, I think he's a pretty tough matchup for Jokic, but we just need to see him at his best. And so I really think he's kind of like the X factor, where I kind of feel like I know what we're getting with the rest of the Suns. Although, like, what's that pick and roll going to look like now? Because, like, they don't have Mikhail and Cam Johnson. So, like, they lost a couple of their best shooters. But then you have KD now, who's, like, a little right. bit of a different type of gravity off that.
Because
the Suns pick and roll, like, just historically, it's so beautiful that when it's just Ayton and Chris and then just three shooters around them. And so this team's, it's a little bit of a different look, but now you have KD. So I think it's still going to be super potent. And obviously that's kind of how you want to attack Jokic first and foremost. So I think Booker's going to be great. I think Durant's going to be great. I think Chris Paul is going to be really good. I think Ayton's kind of like the wild card and like the X factor, where like, if we just get one of the best series of Ayton's life, like I think they've got a great chance.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. It probably depends on what DeAndre Ayton we get. And yeah, if Chris Paul can turn back the clock a little bit, he had a couple creaky moments in that first round series, but there's
he's not
a couple
guarding
games.
He ain't guarding Jamal Murray though. I'll tell you that. Like
for sure.
Like you mentioned that. Like that's where I think like maybe I like Book on Murray.
Book on Murray, yeah.
And that's where it's like, but are you asking too much of Book? Like, you know, that's Murray is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And but I think Book could do a pretty good job on him. But like if Book has the same offensive workload he had in round one, like I don't know, maybe that's too much. So maybe you don't go that direction, or maybe you do, and maybe you give Durant a little bit more of a role on the offense, you know, have him carry a little bit more of a burden. But yeah, that's going to be interesting. Jokic, I don't know, man. I don't think there's anything. I think he's going to get his. There's no doubt.
He's Jokic. So
I almost think like, you know, slowing down Murray and MPJ is kind of going to be the key. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they guard him. This is another one where depth is isn't it? Like now the Nuggets are not known to have a great bench. Like this has obviously been talked about a lot, especially last season, especially during the Jokic MVP campaign, but like they were great in the first round. I actually feel pretty good about this Nuggets bench. The Suns.
Yeah.
Not
compared
so
to the
much.
Suns for
right.
sure. Yeah.
I think that's a pretty big advantage actually for the Nuggets. The Suns bench is the Suns starting five is unbelievable. We know that, but it's like, what are those bench guys going to give you?
It's crazy how much they're missing campaign, and that's not really a spot you want to be at as like a contending team. Like that's not what we expected. I thought they made a mistake, like not getting another guard in the buyout market. There weren't a lot of guys out there that were real difference makers, but we're making another trade. Like they ended up getting like, they got a backup big, they did a few things, but those guys aren't even really playing much. Like,
yeah, man, they're real thin. Like, that, and that's where it's like Booker and KD have to play heavy minutes. And even Chris, like those guys are, I know they did in the first round, and I don't see how that's going to change. Cause like you just can only play that bench so many minutes a game. Like
Shamet has been a complete no show. I agree with the, like running Booker as like the backup point guard. I think that is the move.
Yeah.
But you're still overextending Chris Paul and his starting role when you're doing that. It's interesting. I do think the Nuggets are definitely winning the depth issue, but what do you think about for the series? You got a pick for that one yet? I know you're struggling with it.
This one's really tough for me, man. This one's really tough. Like before the playoffs started, I would have said Suns for sure. But after watching the Nuggets in the first round, like they're going to be tough, man. They're going to be tough. Yeah. I'm in the situation now where I'm like, am I going to pick the Suns just because I've been picking them to come out of the West ever since the Durant trade, and I want to like stay true to that, and you know, or like, because if I'm really going with my gut, I think I got to take Denver in seven.
Mm.
You know, like I definitely picked the Suns all along up until this moment. I've always said Suns are coming out of the West, but man, it's just like, can you really play Durant 40 minutes a game for another series and Booker like? I just think, yeah, between the depth and the Jokic problem and the Murray problem, and then having, I mean, Aaron Gordon is a great weapon defensively. Like, nobody's going to stop Durant, but like, I think Aaron Gordon's a great guy to throw at him. And then KCP is a really good defender too. Like, I would imagine, you know, he probably gets the book assignment, right?
Yeah, that's got to be the way it matches up.
You know, and then Murray on
Chris.
Yeah, and then MPJ. Well, because that's the thing though, is like, it's either going to be Okogie or Torrey Craig, right, as the fifth. So like,
that's that, the MPJ assignment, whoever it is.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Unless you want to, unless you want to put Gordon on that guy and have him roam.
I don't think you can risk putting MPJ can't put on one of the wings. Yeah.
On Durant. You can't do it. That's the thing. It would be tempting to say, let's put Aaron Gordon on Torrey Craig and let him be a roamer. But like,
something
that means MPJ on Durant.
Something Mike Malone never seems to do is put Jokic on like a non-threatening wing player like that. So you could do something like, you know, play like some minutes where you're playing like Aaron Gordon on Ayton and put Jokic on like Torrey Craig to just kind of like help off out of the corner. They never do that. They always have Jokic in like the help position of like the drop position.
Right.
But it'd be interesting to see for like a spell if they went to something like that, if like their drop coverage was getting attacked so bad and they just said like, Jokic, you're playing like the Robert Williams role.
Right, right.
Coming in from the corner, something like that. I've never seen Mike Malone do it, but it could be an interesting wrinkle. I had Bucks winning the whole thing up until about, you know, 0.5 seconds left of regulation last night. So I'm having a hard time with this. I had Bucks over Suns, and I think I'm shifting. I think the Nuggets are kind of slept on. I think I'm going to go with Nuggets in six, but I'm not feeling great about it. But I just think that like the last month or so of the season was pretty uninspiring by the Nuggets. And like, now I'm thinking like, have they been like hiding in plain sight as this like true, true, true contender?
I mean, Jamal Murray's back. Like, I think that's such a huge thing.
I think like, maybe that's the key to the series.
Cause even like in January, it was like, he's playing really well, but I don't know if he's quite that guy yet. This looks like as good as he's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a huge part of it for me. And like,
probably,
you know, I think
behind Booker, like second best guard of the playoffs so far.
Yeah. 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 Definitely. Yeah. If you're saying Jimmy's a forward, I'd probably have him. Yeah. I'd be with that. He was outstanding in the first round. He looks great. And he's just a big shot maker. And again, we just haven't seen this Nuggets team. So I have a hard time counting them out, because I've always been a big believer in this core four. It's just, we haven't really seen them until this season. So,
well, the pressure is on for this team right now. I think the pressure's on for Mike Malone, the same we were talking about for Coach Bud. The pressure for like the criticism of Nikola Jokic is like higher than it's ever been. The knives are sharpened, fangs are out, like people are ready to attack. It's going to be a super interesting series. I hope they come out fucking both teams just firing on all cylinders and we get a fun one. Real quick before we go, we're going to be releasing this pod on Friday. And on Friday, we've got a couple of game sixes in the West. We've got the Kings and the Warriors, and then the Grizzlies and the Lakers. Quick, just 1 minute, give us your predictions on those series and how you think it's going to play out.
I think the Lakers take it back home in LA.
Mm-hmm.
I do. And then I hate to say it.
Hate to say it.
There's no way, man. Yeah, there's no way. There's no way the Kings. it sucks, because if they somehow did and it went to seven and it went back to Golden One, I would for sure pick them in a game seven. But I just don't. The last game was the one they had to win.
Yeah,
they had to win game five. I don't see any way they win game six. You know, at Chase Center, it's just
no.
It's too much, man. It's going to be too much. Like, they had a great season. If they do, it's going to be the happiest moment of these playoffs for me if they can push that one to seven, because that's been the most fun series of these playoffs, and they're absolutely one of my favorite teams in the league. So
just think if that Harrison Barnes shot went in game three,
right?
We'd be talking about it so much differently. There's just a couple of weird breaks in these playoffs. Like, these playoffs have been fucking drunk. I couldn't believe how like this Celtics and Hawks series went to six. Some of the batshit crazy, seven. The Heat, all this crazy shit that's happening. We didn't expect the the Knicks to just completely roll over the Cavs.
I thought that was a 7-game series for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. So we're in for some more surprises. I'm glad that, you know, it's keeping us on our toes. This has been a lot of fun. Like I said before, we're going to just quick transition into our buddy Steve to come in and do a little RIP funeral for the Bucks. I'm going to be listening to that one blind with everybody else tomorrow morning because I just – he said something about doing a bunch of shots. So let's get some peak Steve content in here. Let's thank everybody for listening, for Brett, for the whole Overstated crew, for our buddy Steve, RIP Bucks. Let's go.
Well, hi, Nooney. And you guys won't be able to see this. Time to rip a shot of a little whiskey here. Might do a couple of these during this one. Obviously, I am here because the Milwaukee Bucks, in one of the most historic upsets in NBA history, fall in 5 games to the 8th seed in Miami Heat, and I am at a little bit of a loss for words. I was at the game last night. I was going to record this, and I didn't get home till 1 because obviously it was a overtime game. So, man, I'm just going to chill. I'm just going to let the emotion kind of drain. And you know what? I'm so pissed off, not just because of that we lost. It's how we lost. Just the dumb mistakes of this team. And you know, we can begin wherever you want. We can talk about the free throws. I believe they missed 19 or 20 free throws last night in game 5. But to me, it comes down to the coaching situation. Just game 4 and game 5 alone, those fourth quarters. And everyone that has listened to this podcast knows that I'm a big Bud fan. I support him. I think he's a great head coach. But those fourth quarters where the offense stunk, it was stuck, felt like it was in mud. Couldn't do anything, and just the lack of not being able to take a timeout, not being able to get his team under control, not being able to get it to Brook Lopez in the post when you clearly have a mismatch. That was in both games. And last night, Kevin Love, God bless you. You played great offensively for Miami. Milwaukee, give it to Brook Lopez on the post. Why are we posting up Giannis against Miami's best defender and Bam Adebayo? Give it to Brook Lopez. Let him do some work. It's so unbelievably frustrating watching that and being there and watching on Monday game 4. It's like a car crash that you just see coming. 16-point leads. That is just so stupid. I've never, ever, 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 ever seen that before. There's no words to describe it. There's no words. Like, it's just dumb. And I saw something. I think this describes Mike Budenholzer perfectly. He is a great, great, great head coach at doing all of the hard things. We're talking building culture, getting players to buy in, being disciplined with his players as far as, hey, if you screw up, you're not going to play, you know, things of that nature. I think he's created a good vibe. His players love playing for him. I think he's a great developer. We saw that in Atlanta. Remember the Atlanta U with all the players that they developed? I think he's got an unbelievably good coaching tree. From Taylor Jenkins, Kenny Atkinson, Quinn Snyder. I'm sure there's other people that I'm forgetting. But like all of the easy stuff, he's just not good at. And it boggles my mind. And I think that is what separates a really great head coach from a good head coach. I think there's a lot of teams, you know, 75, 80% of the teams that would kill to have Mike Budenholzer as their head coach. But man, like it's frustrating. It's very, very frustrating, and it's unfortunate that he's going to have to take the fall for this. I would be floored if he ends up coming back to coach this team. It's super sad, man. Like, I'm super bummed for him. I think he's a great guy. I mean, he changed, along with Giannis, the course of this franchise forever. He won a title. He's been unbelievable. I mean, I'm recording this. It's not even May. This is the first time in May that the Bucks haven't moved past the first round in 5 years. That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. And it just sucks, man. Like, I don't know why. Like, hey, everyone's going to talk about the timeout at the end of the overtime. I kind of like that they didn't take a timeout there. I mean, Grayson Allen, shoot the fucking ball. Just shoot the ball, dude. You pump fake, just shoot it. But at the same time, you know, it was the subbing out of Brook Lopez for Pat Connaughton with 2 seconds left to go into overtime on the Jimmy Butler alley-oop play. Like, Mike Budenholzer, if you guys remember, it was the NBA Finals, Miami Heat, San Antonio Spurs, when Ray Allen hit that shot, and Greg Popovich took out Tim Duncan. That's why Chris Bosh got the rebound. That's the only reason that they won, because Tim Duncan wasn't in the game to get that rebound. Mike Budenholzer was on that staff and did the exact same thing. Why are you taking out the guy that finished third in Defensive Player of the Year? It's mind-blowing to me, man. It's just absolutely mind-blowing. I was there. I was screaming. I could not believe that he did that. And you got to credit Miami too, man. I mean, Milwaukee deserves a lot of shit. I keep seeing, oh, man, well, they should have beat them. They should have done this. You know what, man? Miami also shot the shit out of the ball. I think they shot around 50% from three. They could not miss. Now, granted, I think that kind of came back down a little bit in game five. That's why, don't even get me started. But from then on, dude, they could not miss. Jimmy Butler was unbelievable. But it wasn't just Jimmy Butler. Duncan Robinson couldn't miss. Kyle Lowry, he's got cobwebs on. He comes in and kills them in a game. Gabe Vincent, Max Strus. Like, it's just, these dudes just did not miss all season long. Where was this team? You know what I mean? Like, where was this Miami Heat team? Very, very weird. But, you know, that's why you got to play the game, man. And they deserve it, dude. They deserve everything that we got. Jimmy Butler in this series went 35, 25, 30, 56, and 42. The dude was unbelievable. And you could tell, I mean, he was 3-for-10 from three. Finally, he kind of came back to earth last night. But it's just unbelievable, man. That is more than anything, that is a well-coached team. We always knew that Eric Spoelstra was a good coach. Man, but he's a great, great head coach. He might be the best coach in the NBA. He really might. I mean, I think it's him. You could say Pop. You could say, I'm doing another shot here. You could say Steve Kerr if you wanted to. Ty Lue, I think, is really good. But that team comes to play. They're well prepared. But it's honestly, man, it's a make or miss league, and they made their shots. They made their shots, and they're going on to the second round. They're going to play a good Knicks squad. I swear to God, I may jump off my roof if Miami comes back down to the mean and shoots like how they shot in the regular season, and the Knicks beat them, which could happen. That'll be bullshit, but whatever. What are you going to do? But they're good, man. They're really, really good. Going back to Milwaukee, Milwaukee's got a lot of questions that they're going to have to answer. I think this team was built to win now. They were certainly deep. I don't understand the Jay Crowder acquisition. I liked it in a vacuum when they did it because they didn't really give up anybody. But you're not going to play him at all. I know the guy is Jekyll and Hyde when it comes to shooting. He could go shoot 80% from three one game, and he could shoot 20% from three the next game. I get that, but throw him out there. Granted, when Bud did throw him out there, he did not look good. Jimmy Butler was cooking him. Injuries is not an excuse for Milwaukee, and that should not be an excuse. This isn't last year. If anybody makes the excuse that Milwaukee was injured, that's bullshit. Chris Middleton, he was very limited. I would expect some type of offseason knee surgery. Giannis, you know, he was banged up. I think this series is very, very different if he doesn't get hurt. But again, that's not an excuse, man. Miami lost Tyler Hero. Broke his hand. He was their second best playmaker, second best player on their team. Like, shit happens. You have to adjust. You can't, if you're a Bucks fan and you're using injury as an excuse, just stop. Stop, because that's a bad fan. It really is. Was Milwaukee banged up? Sure, man. Do injuries suck? Yeah, man, but everybody's hurt. Just, it sucks, dude. It sucks. I think those two games that Giannis set out, I thought it changed the series, especially specifically in games one and game three. And it sucks, man. But I expect this bench, Milwaukee has to upgrade their bench. You know, John Horst needs to look in the mirror himself. We see this all the time that Milwaukee at the trade deadline is always going to make a big trade. Always, always, always. They do it all the time. It's panned out once with PJ Tucker. That's the only time it's panned out. Everything else has been a flop. Flop. Right? Trading Dante DiVincenzo. Flop. That's another thing. I keep seeing all these podcasters and everybody else say, oh, you know, Milwaukee hasn't had a good draft since Giannis, blah, 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 blah. Do you know, since Mike Budenholzer's been the coach 5 years ago, for 5 years now, do you know who's been on this team? Christian Wood, Dante DiVincenzo, and Malcolm Brogdon. How good would they look? We traded Malcolm Brogdon because we wanted to sign Eric Bledsoe instead. Now, I know Eric Bledsoe was using the Jrue Holiday trade, and I also know that Milwaukee ownership didn't want to go in the luxury tax to keep Malcolm Brogdon. Fuck, could use him, couldn't he? How about Dante DiVincenzo, the big elephant in the room with all my fellow Bucks fans? Yeah, you know why we traded Dante DiVincenzo? Because we let PJ Tucker walk, because we were cheap, and then we had to go get a big, and that big was Serge Ibaka. out of the NBA. Cool. Awesome. Awesome. Christian Wood. Yeah, he's thriving in Dallas. I understand he doesn't play the best defense. Man, he'd look good in the Bucks uniform right now, wouldn't he? Pretty damn good. So yes, Milwaukee does draft okay. They do sign good players. They have a guy who I think is going to be, if you remember me at the beginning of the season, Herb Jones Light, Marjon Beauchamp, play him. I don't know why we didn't play him. When we did play him, he looked good. Play him, man. He's going to make rookie mistakes. Now it really doesn't matter because we're out in the first round. There's definitely some pieces left in the cupboard. I do trust the front office. I trust the ownership. Like we're gonna fix this. Milwaukee's going to fix this. They're going to be okay. Giannis, just get some rest, man. Sit out this summer. Get some rest. Middleton has a $40 million player option. I expect that he's going to opt in. Maybe they sign him long term. I expect Brook Lopez to be back. I think he'll be fine. But Milwaukee's got to fix this bench, man. I appreciate and I respect everything that Grayson Allen has done. I think the dirty tag that he gets is a little bit overrated. I think there's plenty of players that are way more dirtier than he is. It's just fun to hate on Grayson Allen. But you can't be a championship contending team with Grayson Allen playing 30 minutes a game. You can't, man. It's not going to work. He had 8 points last night in a game that you needed to have, and he looked scared. He looked lost. Look at the final possession. That says it all. Says it all right there. So I have to kind of get out of here because the Zencaster that we're using only has 3 minutes left. So I'll greet you with this. Here's another shot for you guys. God, fucking this just sucks. So I expect Milwaukee to come back better next season. Of course, it's not going to matter. And I get why. And Milwaukee should feel that pressure. I have no idea who the new head coach is going to be. I've been pushing for Chris Quinn, the assistant coach from Miami, but we'll kind of see what happens. But tip your hat off to Miami, man. They wanted it. They mentally broke Milwaukee. I haven't seen that team play that disorganized in like 3 years. I thought once they got over Brooklyn, they got over the hump, and they looked good, man. They were not scared of Boston at all last season or last playoffs, right? No Middleton. Boston's clearly the better team. Fuck you, Boston. We're going to go in and beat you. We're not scared of you. Fuck off. In Miami, I don't know. I'm at a loss for words. I have no idea why. I love what Giannis said kind of post-game. Miami was playing to beat Milwaukee while Milwaukee was playing to win a championship. It makes perfect sense, man. They completely looked past Miami. Completely looked past them. I could not believe that spread last night was 11.5. And like I said, man, I like Bud. I think he's a good head coach. I think he'll do great wherever he goes next if, in fact, he does get fired. But, man, dude, get 2 fourth quarter meltdowns, can't have that. Cannot have that. So I'll do one more shot with you guys. That's 4 in about 12 minutes. As you know, that's what we do. All right. Love you guys. I'll have more to say later on. I'll jump on when we get a little bit more minutes. But love you guys. We'll be on. Bucks and Six for life. Peace.